Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 24th day of June 2019, Monday again. Another one arrives. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for clicking play, downloading, doing whatever, however you got this. If you stumbled across it, if you could find it on the website, thank you for clicking play there. If you couldn't find it on the website, I apologize, but subscribe and it'll just show up to you. You wouldn't be the only one. All right, lots of stuff to get to, tons of things to talk about. Still accepting entries for the signed copies of the Shannon Bream book, Finding the Bright Side. I think we're going to do give away two signed copies on Wednesday. So you have to get your entries in before Wednesday. Just email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. That's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And let me know that you want to be entered into the book drawing, and you shall have a chance to win a signed book. It's just that easy. It really is, ladies and gentlemen. It's just that easy. And if you want to tell some friends about the program, as always, we appreciate it. The only advertising we got, and the only way to really find the show now, is word of mouth. So get your mouths running. Get them words out of your mouth. And I will be eternally, eternally grateful to you. All right. Lots of things to talk about. Like I said, Mayor Pete not having a good time. It's tough when the flavor of the month starts leaving a bad taste in your mouth. And that seems to be what the Democratic media complex is doing, is happening right now. We will get into that. I think he's actually getting a raw deal, but it's of his own making. So I have very little sympathy. Plus, he's a liberal Democrat, so I have even less sympathy. I'll explain it all coming up. Fear not. We also have, good Lord, Cory Booker. He had kind of a good week. He got a little bit of kind of press because Joe Biden stepped into a pile of horse manure. And then he goes and does something and says something incredibly stupid. Plus, Joe Biden's doing and saying things that he lived through this history and he doesn't seem to know it. So we'll get to all of that. But I want to start off with a couple of things about President Trump. First, something ridiculous. And I'm surprised at how little attention this story is getting. On Friday, a woman came out and accused the president 20, 30 years ago or whatever of raping her in Bergdorf Goodman, which apparently was an upscale department store in New York City back in the early 90s. I've heard she doesn't seem to remember what year it is or what year it was. She kind of sounds like she doesn't know what year it is. Her name is E. Jean Coli. No, she's not E. Coli. E. Jean Carroll. She's apparently an advice columnist. I used to, whenever I'd find myself waiting someplace and all there was a newspaper, I'd read the comic strips and I would, Calvin and Hobbes, still classic, Far Side, awesome. And I would read some of the advice columns. Well, apparently this woman is a well-known advice columnist. She also has a book coming out, which this will get her some publicity. I looked it up, though. It's in the 400s on Amazon, which is pretty good. Here's a little secret about Amazon, because I remember when my book was coming out, it was like not due out for a month or whatever, and it's like, well, I checked it. Once you write a book, Amazon is really the only unit of measure you have with any kind of regularity as to how it's doing or how it will be doing. So you check and reload and refresh Amazon, your Amazon page, 1,000 times and look at the number. It updates around 45 of every hour. So like 8:45, 9:45, every hour it updates. And I looked at it and it's 6 weeks out and it's like, oh, it's at 25 or 30,000. You think, well, there are like 10 million books on Amazon. That's pretty good. I'm feeling pretty confident. And then your publisher comes along, or at least my publisher comes along and craps all over you before the book comes out. And he goes, yeah, those numbers don't mean anything. Really, if you're under 2,000, if you're in the top 2,000, that means your book is selling. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. And it really doesn't, because you eventually get access, once the book is out and for sale, you get access to a page that will tell you every week how many copies you sold. And then if you watch the number you're ranking and then the number of copies sold that week, you think, how in the hell did that happen? Because if it, you know, goes from 150,000 to 25,000, you think, wow, that had to be something happened, right? No, not necessarily. Sometimes it's just one copy that goes. They have some weird algorithm. So my publisher said if it's in the top 2,000, that means it's moving. Obviously, higher up it is. Mark Levin's book is like number 4 right now, and that's selling hundreds of copies every day at this point, if not thousands of copies every day. But the, you know, 400th book, it's probably selling, I don't know, 50 copies a day. It's not bad for a book that doesn't come out for a couple of weeks. But E. Jean Carroll is trying to sell that book. And she's got a fantastical story. It's all about how men suck. But I'm not going to give the title of it if you really want to know. But it might as well be Men Suck. E. Jean Carroll she came out with this story in New York Magazine, big cover story about Donald Trump. She says he raped her in the dressing room at a popular posh, I think it's out of business now, New York City department store back in the early 90s. How nobody knew about this, nobody saw anything, is beyond me. But that's hardly the point, and it's nothing new for the Democrats. Remember Brett Kavanaugh's rape parties when he's 15 years old. Gang rape parties. Oh, come on, come all. That Julie Swetnick attended several of, because why not go back? Look, the music was great. The crowd was great. I didn't care for the rape. But, you know, everything else, they had pigs in a blanket. So how am I not going to go back and get more pigs in a blanket? That's kind of the level of absurdity that this story that she told is. I'm not even going to bother you with the actual audio of her sort of recounting what she claims happened, because her story doesn't make any freaking sense whatsoever. And she doesn't really actually tell the whole story. She hops and skips around and gets distracted. It's very bizarre. She seems like a crazy cat lady, if I had to guess. I don't know her situation, but I think that she's probably living alone someplace, living well, and there's a lot of cats. Nothing against cats, but cat ladies, meh. So one of the things that caught my ear while she was on with Lawrence O'Donnell on Friday, this story dropped on Friday, and it was shockingly gone by Saturday. Really, honestly, it just disappeared. There was, where did the story go? You would think, I mean, in the occasional tweet every now and then, but other than that, this isn't burning up the airwaves. It isn't burning up the Sunday shows. Why? Because it's so ridiculous. And what makes it ridiculous is not the allegation itself, the story. They could always justify that. They could move it and gloss over it. The actual host could tell the story much better than the alleged victim could. What makes it so worthless to Democrats was her answer about whether or not she would file charges. See, I believe in New York, it's still possible to file charges. I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on rape or sexual assault in the state of New York. Well, E. Jean, I don't know if they call her Jean or E. Jean, I don't know. I've never seen her advice column. She's no Dear Abby or whoever the other lady was, Ann Landers, that was her sister. She recounted Lawrence O'Donnell asked her whether or not she would press charges, knowing full well it would be New York City. You've got an incredibly liberal government, say mayor, but the whole government in New York City is liberal and corrupt. And believe me, there is a giant pot of gold waiting out there for anybody who can destroy Donald Trump. anybody, anywhere, on anything, real or not, as long as it sticks, if you can destroy Donald Trump, you will forever be, they'll sandblast Thomas Jefferson off of Mount Rushmore and put your face up there if you're able to take out Donald Trump. So Lawrence O'Donnell's question is, why don't you press charges? Because that, again, would give life to the story. It would continue the story on. It would give Democrats another bit of hope. They're all sitting there watching them, dreaming. Well, her answer as to why she won't press charges is one of the more bizarre, unstable, left-wing, lunatic answers you will ever hear, and I say that knowing full well that the Democratic Party debates start on Wednesday. And I'm confident in saying that of all the 20 people who will be up on that stage in those two nights, they will not come close to sounding as crazy as E. Jean Carroll did in explaining why she will not press charges against Donald Trump. She's a lib. She's a big time lib. She hates Donald Trump. She hates Brett Kavanaugh. She's tweeted. She's a huge fan of Christine Blasey Ford. She is a down the line doctrinaire liberal, which also explains how crazy she is and why she's crazy. But listen to her answer, because you're going to be scratching your head. This happened Friday night, 10 o'clock hour. So most people weren't watching. And the story kind of died after this. I only play it now and only mention it now because I want you to remember, because at some point, somebody's going to try and make a stink out of this. And I think they're going to try and make a stink out of it without her. They'll just say, you know, I was accused of sexual assault and whatever. Listen to her answer.
Would you consider bringing a rape charge against Donald Trump for this? Why not?
I would find it disrespectful to the women who are down on the border, who are being raped around the clock down there without any protection. They're young women. They've, you know, tried to come into the country. They're, as you know, they're there by the thousand. The women have very little protection there. It would just be disrespectful if I, you know, and mine was 3 minutes. I'm a mature woman. I can handle it. I can keep going. You know, my life has gone on. I'm a happy woman. But for the women down there, and for the women, actually, around the world, you know, in every culture, this is going on, no matter high in society or low in society. It just seems disrespectful that I would bring it just doesn't make sense to me.
She won't file rape charges because of the situation down on the border and the sexual assaults that are the rapes that are happening in the detention centers? Or is she referring to the rapes that happen along the 2,000-mile march where human traffickers are sexually assaulting women and young girls up there that Democrats like to ignore, but she's, or that women are just being assaulted somewhere in the world, and so she's not going to bring charges because of that? Does that make any sense to anybody whatsoever? It makes sense in one sense if you don't have any evidence to back it up, if you have no way, nothing whatsoever. If it's such a cockamamie screwball story that on its face it's laughable, you don't want to go in there and face the possibility of filing a false police report. But if you're a liberal in good standing and you're trying to move a book, you're perfectly willing to go on MSNBC and throw a couple of bombs and try and raise your Amazon ranking. Have you ever heard anything that insane? You can see now why this wasn't the dominant story over the weekend. Because it's crazy. Because it's not believable. Like, no. I'm perfectly fine. I got a book coming out. I can't be tied up in no legal matters because I got to go and promote my book. By the way, buy my book. That was the gist of it. Seems to me to be a non-story so far. She still has the outfit, allegedly. So theoretically, she should be able to have some evidence and she says she, you know, just hung it up. She wanted to keep it because it was a bad memory and she didn't know what to do with it. I don't know about the situation, the psychological situation of somebody in that circumstance, but that doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to anybody I know. And it apparently doesn't make sense to even the people at NBC News, because they didn't. She was available. I didn't see her. Maybe she was out there over the weekend. But the story seems to have disappeared because it's so ridiculous. But again, the media thought they had them. Lawrence O'Donnell thought he had an exclusive interview with the woman who was going to take down Donald Trump. Very excited about it. The Twitter sphere was all a Twitter, so to speak. They thought they had him. Then they heard her. Then they heard her story. Then they went away. Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird how it works? Also, today is Monday. Today was the day that the mass deportation, at the rounding up of illegal aliens who had received court orders, who'd gone through all the appeals process or didn't show up, who have actual court orders ordering them to leave the country. Today was the day that President Trump was going to unleash the hounds, if you will, in Montgomery Burns style, to go and get people and get them the hell out of the country once and for, well, not for all, but finally. Then Saturday, a tweet came from the President of the United States, and he announced that because Democrats asked nicely, he is going to delay the deportations for 2 weeks. He's giving Democrats 2 weeks to come up with some kind of deal on the border that will handle some part of the situation. The whole thing's rather vague. Then it comes out that it was Nancy Pelosi. Donald Trump caved, agreed, however you want to put it. Look, my dad is not a Democrat. My dad is a hardcore Republican, forklift driver for General Motors for 30 years, as blue collar gets. And my dad called me up on Sunday, and he doesn't swear very often. I've never heard him say the word pussy before, but he called Donald Trump a pussy. He was pissed off. He was swearing about the president changing his mind. The president caving. He doesn't understand why this came about. CNN is reporting. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called President Donald Trump Friday night to ask him to call off the Immigration and Customs Enforcement deportation raids scheduled for Sunday, a source familiar with the call told CNN. Trump pulled back on the raids Saturday, a matter of hours after he spoke in support of the coordinated arrests and deportations that were slated to hit 10 major cities. Trump announced via Twitter that he would delay for 2 weeks U.S. raids to give Congress a chance to, quote, get together and work out a solution, end quote, on enforcement of his signature immigration policy. Apparently, they spoke at 7:20 p.m., Friday night for about 12 minutes, according to this source that talked to Jake Tapper. President mulled it over and said, okay, I'll give you 2 weeks. 2 weeks. It's rather weird to me that the Speaker of the House of Representatives would call the President of the United States and ask that people, in defiance of court orders, be given 2 more weeks to remain in defiance of those court orders, while Democrats are pitching a fit about the White House exerting executive privilege in defiance of subpoenas up there. Well, a court order is a little bit more powerful than a congressional subpoena. And they're just saying, well, we'll ignore that. Just continue to ignore that. And by the way, you're history's greatest monster. You've got concentration camps. You're this, you're that. All these things they're doing and saying about the president. And Donald Trump agreed to wait 2 weeks. Now, whatever deal comes out of this, if any deal comes out of this, better be a damn good deal. And it better not involve insulating people who have been ordered by a court to leave the country. But I'm afraid, and my dad is afraid, that that'll be what happens. I don't know if that's true, and I know I can already hear you guys typing on the keyboard. Some of you are going to be really angry that I'm criticizing the president for this, but I have to say what I believe, and this is what I believe. Our laws either matter or they don't. They should be enforced or they should not be enforced. And all over the country, so often, always from the left, our laws are being ignored and deliberately, publicly thwarted. People in this country illegally have no business being here, yet they have a political party actively working on their behalf. The American people don't seem to have a political party actively working on their behalf. Oh, everybody pays lip service to it. But when it comes time to make the rubber meet the road, where is it? Where is the action? Where is the movement? Where is the push to enforce our law? All we hear is about how the people who've broken the laws in this country are victims. Not just the sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal aliens. Oh, they came here through no fault of their own. There are at least 20 million of them in this country illegally. They have no freaking clue why they're here. They're just working illegally, taking money and sending it back home and taking jobs from Americans. Okay, it's taking jobs from the poorest Americans, the people with the least education. Those are the people. It's not PhDs and master's degrees come flooding across the border. It is people with low to no skills. Well, we have plenty of those here in this country. Go to a construction site and see how often you hear English being spoken. Just as an experiment. So you've got nobody seemingly working on behalf of the American people. That pisses off guys like my dad. My dad dropped out of high school, got his GED so he could work for GM, and he went in there at 19 and he retired the first day he could because of my mother's health issues. But the union contract, that's a long story and for another time, but there are millions of Americans like that who believed that we were finally going to get somebody who was going to do what they would say. And every time the president gets up to the line, it seems, he backs down. He's going to declassify all these documents, and then he doesn't. He leaves it up to somebody else. He postpones it. Let's see it. Let's have it. I don't know what the Democrats are going to offer, but I know that they're going to stab you in the back over it, Mr. President. So playing nice with them gets you nothing. Playing nice with them will not stop Nancy Pelosi from hemming and hawing and saying you're a criminal and talking about impeachment. It's not going to turn off that spigot. Nothing will. They hate you. They will never be your friend. They might work out something that's really beneficial to them because that's all they care about. But they will try to make you look like a fool and stop falling for it. You are president of the United States. Again, we see Democrats all across this country thwarting every law possible. We're a sanctuary city. We're a sanctuary state. You can get out of here. We had politicians warning illegal aliens on social media over the weekend and training them how. AOC tweeted out how to avoid an ICE raid and encouraged people to take in these illegals and guard them from the ICE agents and look out for them and blah, blah, blah. She probably caused a panic. She did it after, I think, the president announced that he'd called off the raids, but she doesn't seem to be able to read. But if you just listen to politicians, it's not even just Democrats anymore. Sadly, it's more and more Republicans. They talk about, we need prison reform. They talk about mass incarceration. Mass incarceration is terrible. They're not just picking up people off the streets and throwing them in prison. These are people who broke the law. These are people who broke laws that were passed by elected officials. If you don't like the laws that you passed, if you don't like the results of the laws that you passed, change the laws. But don't tell me that, oh, we're sending too many people. Nonviolent drug offenders are filling up our prisons. Most of those nonviolent drug offenders are actually violent offenders. that the case either couldn't be proven against them or it just was too risky for jury nullification. I mean, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of the O.J. Simpson trial. Jury nullification right there, shining example. So prosecutors will take somebody who's got, you know, possession. They've got caught with a bunch of heroin or something that they were going to sell. They're also caught with a gun. They're also suspected in maybe a shooting or a liquor store robbery or beating the crap out of somebody. And they say, okay, listen, we'll give you 5 to 8 years on possession with intent to distribute. And we'll get rid of all the other stuff if you just go in and plea. And the prosecutors are happy because it makes their numbers look good. And the criminal is happy because they're not facing a life sentence anymore or 25 years. And so they take the deal. The violence and the actual other crimes that they committed and could have been charged with and may well have been convicted on just swept away. And they go on the books as a nonviolent drug offender. Why, this person's serving 5 to 8 years for possession of X amount of heroin. That's ridiculous. You've got murderers who get less time. Yeah, that's kind of a problem too. But just because he's in there for dealing drugs doesn't mean he wasn't a bunch of other evidence that he did a bunch of horrible things too. That's all swept under the rug because everybody benefits. The prosecutors get their numbers, they get their victory, and the defense gets a much lighter sentence. And then the politicians swoop in and say, look at all of these sweet, sweet, nourishing, nonviolent drug offenders. How many heroin dealers, how many crack dealers do you know who are just the easy luck, not that you know many crack or heroin dealers, but how many do you suspect are just the happy-go-lucky kind of guys? They just live. You don't have my money? That's okay. Get me next time. Don't worry. This hit is on me. We're just hanging out in this corner, having a good time, and every once in a while I'll sell a bag of heroin. It's not, no, there's no threat, and there's no need for violence. That person doesn't exist. Yet to hear these politicians say it, oh, we've got to get these people out of prison. We need to stop mass incarceration. How about we focus on stopping mass violations of the law? Shouldn't that be the focus? I mean, yes, you can. If you don't like people going to prison for selling drugs, then make selling drugs legal. Right? And suddenly the prisons will empty or will stop filling up. I mean, there'll probably be more violent crime, but eventually you can just do the same thing to them. Look, I just beat somebody with a baseball bat, but it was a wooden baseball bat, not a metal baseball bat, and everybody knows wood has give. You get to that mentality. Think of it this way. If we went and killed everybody in the hospital right now who's sick, just put them out of our misery, because that's what it would be doing. Statistically, and in all studies, we would be immediately the healthiest country on the face of the earth. We have the lowest number of sick people. Our hospitals are not overrun, so on and so forth. Yeah, statistically, absolutely. Realistically, no. If you let nonviolent, quote-unquote, drug offenders out of prison, why, our rank and the number of people incarcerated in this country would drop significantly. But they're not really nonviolent drug offenders. By the way, I would argue that selling somebody heroin is kind of an act of violence. If you're going to tell me, and the political party most vocal about this is going to tell me, that words are violence, then selling somebody a drug they're addicted to is violence too. It's even more violent. Anyway, back to the original point. Now we're waiting for 2 weeks. We don't know what, if any, kind of deal is going to be cut. But theoretically, if Nancy Pelosi asked to postpone deportations of the, and we're starting off with 2,000, I think the number is, people who have court orders against them, to deport them now. If they're postponing that for 2 weeks, that to me means that Nancy Pelosi wants to cut a deal that involves keeping those people in this country. Keeping those people in, why else delay the deportations? Why else delay the action? Why else delay rounding them up? going out and arresting them unless you're trying to protect them. And that's the Democrats' priority. And the president caved. We'll find out in 2 weeks or maybe before if these negotiations, quote unquote, fall apart, or God help us if some bad deal comes out of it. But I found that disturbing, that the president would decide when he was finally going to start getting tough on deportations, to actually do it. The 11th hour, he canceled it, gave the Democrats 2 more weeks. I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him. Nobody should be trying to throw Nancy Pelosi. She's frail and old. She'd shatter like a glass dropped on the floor. Go ahead and email me if you don't like it. I know there's going to be a whole bunch of people going, unsubscribe, unsubscribe, unsubscribe. Think about it. Don't react emotionally. Let your elected politicians know that this is unacceptable. Our laws mean something. If you want to change the law, change the law. But just like suddenly, let's just say murder becomes legal at midnight on Tuesday, right? Midnight Tuesday, murder is legal. If you murder somebody at 11 p.m. on Tuesday, you're still breaking the law, and you should be held accountable for it. Those people that are slated to be deported broke the law, and I guarantee you it's not the first time that they've done it. They should pay the consequences for that. But Democrats, that's their priority. President Trump gave him 2 more weeks. 2 more weeks to disappear, 2 more weeks to go into hiding, 2 more weeks to do whatever. He shouldn't have. He really shouldn't have. Just to put a fine point on it, Adam Schiffhead was on CNN on Sunday, yesterday, talking with Jake Tapper about this very deal and talking about working with the administration. Listen to what he accuses the administration of. Now, Adam Schiff is a chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He's a very powerful, important Democrat, and he's a media darling. The liberals love him. You would think if Nancy Pelosi were sincere, she would say, all right, these people would pump the brakes just a little bit, maybe even just take their foot off the accelerator and try to broker some kind of deal. In order to try and broker some kind of deal, you need to foster some kind of goodwill. Tell me if you hear anything remotely close to goodwill from Adam Schiffhead here blasting the president, by the way, for a lot of things that Barack Obama did.
Let me ask you, President Trump tweeted yesterday that he's going to delay plans for these ICE mass deportations in major cities across the United States to allow 2 weeks for Congress to, quote, get together and work out a solution to the asylum and loophole problems at the southern border. Are you open to negotiations on this to avoid those deportations 2 weeks from now?
We've always been open to negotiations, and in fact, we have been negotiating, and there is a bipartisan package in the Senate of some emergency supplemental relief to try to provide assistance. But make no mistake, there is nothing that Congress is doing or not doing that compels the administration to have facilities where children don't have blankets or toothbrushes or soap. And for the vice president or the president to blame Congress for their own malfeasance is just completely besides the point and unethical and unacceptable. They could cure this problem today, but they don't want to because, frankly, the cruelty is part of their policy. It's part of what they think will deter migrants from coming here. It's part of what they think will motivate the Congress to build a wall. And to use these children that way is, I just think, immoral.
It's immoral. It's an outrage. He's a monster. Donald Trump is making children sleep without blankets and without toothbrushes. Well, their parents just had them march 2,000 miles without toothbrushes. Did they chuck them out right as they got to the U.S. border and said, no, you'll get a Reach Plus with rubber gum massaging parts. So throw away your old toothbrush. How is it our responsibility? How is it our fault? How is it the Trump administration's fault? You can't foster goodwill with people of bad intent. There is no good intent here from the Democrats. There is political will, and Donald Trump needs to learn that, and he needs to reverse course here. Put up or shut up, Nancy. That's what he's got to say. What do you got? There are liberals out there who were tweeting over the weekend these pictures. One of them was a woman named Nancy Lee Gran. She's an actress on some soap opera. She's got hundreds of thousands of followers. And this went viral over the weekend. She tweeted out pictures of, oh, this sweet, poor, nourishing illegal alien sleeping under foil blankets. Oh, it's an outrage what Donald Trump is doing to the... They're in overcrowded situations, and this is the perhaps the greatest affront to humanity since the Holocaust. What's weird is while these pictures went viral, and she got more than 28,000 retweets on just her version alone, thousands of others. The pictures are from 2015. Curiously, the date stamp on the photographs was cropped out. That doesn't matter. They went far and wide. The narrative was reinforced. Liberals hardened their position, and the White House caved. They just cropped out the date, 2015. Now, who was president in 2015? I can't remember. I don't have a history book that current, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't Donald Trump. I think maybe it was Barack Obama. Yet these abhorrent conditions that, by the way, remember all the, these are people sleeping in cages. All those pictures were from 2015 as well. It's weird. None of this mattered in 2015 because we had a Democrat president. Now we have Donald Trump, who is bending over backwards to accommodate Democrats. And Democrats are continually stabbing him in the back, the side, the front, the top, the bottom, everywhere. It's enough, Mr. President. They're not interested in making a deal. Maybe if you start actually enforcing the law, then they'll want to change the law. Right now, they have no incentive to change the law because they can ignore the law and you're willing to give them more and more time. You're being conned. I wish he would stop. I wish he would do what he said. I can only imagine what Ann Coulter is saying. All right, so like I said, we got a lot of other things. It is Monday. Those of you who are still listening and didn't turn this off because of what I was saying, it's Monday. On Wednesday, we've got a little bit of music for this. On Wednesday is the first night of the 2020 Woke Olympics, the 2020 Olympiad. The debates start this week, and it is they're going to be a lot of frontrunners as they gather to light the torch at the opening ceremony. Yes, the debate hosted by MSNBC and moderated in part by Rachel Maddow is the opening ceremony of the 2020 Woke Olympics. We should light a torch somewhere and just let it burn until they get a nominee. I do love this music, though. It's classic John Williams. It's awesome music. John Williams is Beethoven, modern Beethoven, modern Mozart. But yeah, we are getting to that point. It's starting to get real. On Wednesday will be the first debate. On Thursday will be the second debate. Elizabeth Warren kind of got the shaft. She's at the kiddie table in the first debate. And all the other big names are in the second debate, allegedly by the luck of the draw. If the debate with Biden and Sanders and Buttigieg was on Wednesday, then you would have counted on nobody watching the Thursday debate, and Elizabeth Warren would have really been screwed. But with Elizabeth Warren's debate being the first debate, there'll be an audience for it, just out of the morbid curiosity factor. It's going to be fun to watch in any event. But as they all sort of clamor to get in there and really get the official kickoff of debate season, of the primary season going, the powerhouses, the front runners, they're kind of limping in there. Bernie Sanders is becoming less and less popular. His numbers are dwindling, so this debate is going to be wildly important to him. Here's my theory about why Bernie Sanders is sort of fading. In 2016, Bernie was the exception. Hillary was kind of trying to play middle of the road. She was running as if she'd already won. The system was rigged to help her. Bernie put up a hell of a fight and forced a real fight to happen in the primary. He did it with socialism. Just a couple years later, most people, I would say all of the candidates over on the Democratic side, have come around to Bernie's way of thinking. He's no longer unique. It's not Bernie, the rabid progressive left-wing socialist, versus the establishment. It is everybody is a rabid progressive socialist to one degree or another, and Bernie's just another person over there. He's also an old white guy. And the Democratic Party that is obsessed with race, being old and being white, is not a help to Bernie. So he's got, you know, some support. He's got a lot more support than most people. But his support is fading as they say, well, you know what? Elizabeth Warren is saying the same stuff, only she's a woman. Or Pete Buttigieg is saying the same stuff, only he's young and gay, so I can go for him. And then there are just people who go, I know the name Joe Biden. I'll vote for Joe Biden. It'll be interesting to watch, but as they're limping in there, Joe Biden is limping in there after a week of praising segregationists and just unbelievable tone deafness, like he's unaware of what his party has become. Just as a shining example, latest, he praised Fritz Hollings, who was a segregationist over the weekend again in South Carolina. And he said this to the South Carolina Democratic Convention, Democratic Party Convention was on Saturday, and they gave exclusive rights to MSNBC. They banned all other media. It was just MSNBC. It's so pathetic and transparent, and MSNBC should be embarrassed to be the chosen network, literally the chosen network of the Democratic Party, to the exclusion of everybody else. Believe me, if the Republicans said we're only having Fox, MSNBC would be beside itself with rage and anger. The Republicans would never do that. The Democrats did it because they know that MSNBC would be grateful for it, and they would not stand in solidarity with their brothers against something ridiculous and some threat to freedom of the press that was going on because they were being favored. MSNBC sent two hosts there to conduct interviews with the candidates as part of their live coverage. Who did they send? They sent race baiter Al Sharpton, well-known racist, well-known tax cheat, and well-known homophobe Joy Reid. Why? Because they don't hold themselves to any standards. So in an interview with Al Sharpton, Joe Biden was talking about how woke everybody is, to be perfect. It is the woke Olympics. How woke everybody is and how he's got so much faith in the millennials. And he cites a historical example. It's from his lifetime, from his adulthood, before my time, before I was born. But I happen to notice what was wrong with this quote. Just listen to Joe and I'll explain after.
There's so much we can do, and it's within our capacity to do it. That's the interesting thing. And I think what's happening now is I think that Donald Trump may have reawakened sensibilities in this country to say, whoa, maybe we can do this now. Just like our generation was awakened when Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy were assassinated. Whole generation said, I'm back in, man. These millennials, they get it, right?
Yeah.
And now they want to get engaged.
He's praising millennials. And he says, man, Donald Trump, he's comparing the assassination of MLK and RFK to the election of Donald Trump. That in and of itself is incredibly stupid. But he uses it wrong. He says, well, now they're woke. They're ready to go. They're really ready to get engaged because of this. It's just like those things. Those assassinations took place in 1968. Nixon won his first term. 1972, Nixon won his second term. 1976, Jimmy Carter won because of Watergate. But then 1980, Reagan won, reelected in 84. George H.W. Bush won in 1988. So if the generation that Joe Biden is talking about that really was shaken to its core and woken up in 1968 because of those assassinations, if they really were really brought to their feet, they lost 5 of the next 6 presidential elections. You could also say that they lost 7 of the next 9 presidential elections if you go to George W. Bush. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He's trying to sound hip. He's trying to sound woke. But every one of his, if you noticed, maybe it's senility, and I don't say this jokingly. He's an older guy. He's 76 years old. And when people's minds start to go, it's weird, at least been my experience, that they tend to forget things that happened in recent times, but recall things that happened a long time ago, and recall them almost with clarity, like they just happened. Joe Biden, using examples from when he first came to the Senate in 1972 to show that he's able to work with people he doesn't like rather than, you know, examples from the majority of voters' lifetimes, is an example of that. Him going back and trying to make this analogy about 1968 that's wrong, that missed the lessons of 1968 and the political history that followed, is another example of him just, he doesn't seem there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's got it right. And maybe somebody out there listening, it clicks in their mind and makes perfect sense. If that's the case, please tell me. I'd be more than happy to hear you out and read your emails. But to my mind, he seems like somebody who is not only living off his past and lost in his past, he seems trapped in his past. Like his more recent history just eludes him. I don't know, but we shall see. So he's limping into those debates, not doing very well, not seeming to have a lot of energy, not seeming to have a good, firm grasp on reality. It will be interesting to watch. The best thing to happen for Joe Biden in these debates, by the way, is there are going to be 10 people on the stage and 5 moderators asking questions. The questions are going to be limited in time to 90 seconds or maybe 2 minutes. Nobody's going to get a lot of time. Nobody's going to be able to say a whole bunch. And they're going to have to ask questions of everybody. So Joe will be a face in the crowd, and people will remember he was there. As long as he doesn't start playing with his own poop up on the stage, it's hard to see how he loses a debate with that many people up there. He can afford to finish in the middle of the pack, and that I suspect, is what they're hoping for. Somebody who can't afford to finish in the middle of the pack because the expectations have been set so high for him is Mayor Pete Buttigieg. He was the latest version of the flavor of the month. He's fallen. He's fallen pretty bad. Not in the polls, but in the, you watch, the media coverage sort of dictates the polls at this point, since most people don't know who these people are. So if they see a face up on television with glowing coverage, they go, oh, Mayor Pete, he seems interesting. And then in the woke Olympics fashion, oh, he's gay too, and he's only 37? Yeah, let's look at him, and I like him. I like the fact that he's young and he's gay, without really knowing what he stands for or anything about his record. Well, now they're starting to look at his record, not because he wants them to, but because there was an officer-involved shooting in South Bend, Indiana. And, well, it fits the old liberal narrative perfectly. Cops are racist, and it's open season on black men. It was a white police officer who shot a black man. Well, that's enough. It doesn't matter the circumstances. It doesn't matter whether the shooting was justified. It is a racist act of aggression by a white racist police officer against a black man who was just minding his own business. And in typical liberal fashion, the activist wing of the party took to the streets, almost on autopilot, a muscle reflex. And now Pete Buttigieg is being accused of being a racist, of leading a racist town, of not doing enough to fight racism. We'll get to the audio and the Meet the Press audio in a second, but one thing you never see about this case, I had to look for it, it took a little while to find it, is a description of the encounter between the dead man and the police officer. It's weird. Eric Logan is the guy who was killed. He's 54 years old. He was 54 years old. Sergeant Ryan O'Neill is the police officer. Sounds like a white guy name. Listen to this encounter. It's only ever mentioned casually. They don't go into the detail. They don't go into any witnesses. They don't go into much of anything because that would upset the narrative apple cart. But this is from Fox News, which is one of the few places you'll find it, and it's even just casually mentioned here. Quote, O'Neill, who is white, was responding to a report of a suspicious person breaking into cars when investigators said he fired one shot that hit Logan and another that missed Logan after Logan threatened him with a knife. He threatened him with a knife. This guy was breaking into cars, allegedly, and threatened a police officer with a knife. Was he on drugs? Who knows? Was he drunk? We don't know. There's no details. Were there witnesses? Can't find it. Not interested. It's not helpful to the narrative. The narrative is white cop bad, black victim always good. Well, now Pete is having to deal with this Frankenstein's monster that these leftists created. This narrative that the police are always bad and the victims are always good. You know, Michael Brown, Ferguson, the most famous example. Michael Brown was not a good dude. He just ripped off a liquor store. He was high out of his mind. He attacked the police officer. He tried to grab his gun. That's not just eyewitness testimony. That is forensic fact. He was shot in the hand. The family's own forensic pathologist that they hired came to the very same conclusion. He was not surrendering. He was not shot execution style with his hands up saying, don't shoot. He was charging the police officer. But it didn't matter. The story was set. And to this day, it still doesn't matter to people. The facts of it. It's indicative of what society is. The same thing is happening here to Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete left the campaign trail and went back to South Bend, Indiana to try and calm this storm because it's making him look bad, to be perfectly honest. It was a town hall that devolved into a big mess and shouting match. And this is the problem. There isn't an investigation done yet. No one has any patience. Back in the Old West, it's, oh, you get a posse together and we get mob justice. And we thought we had evolved past that. We haven't evolved past that. The Democratic Party has devolved society back to what it was back then. It's incredibly disturbing. Mayor Pete was talking to a crowd of people. Let's listen to a little clip of Pete and listen to the anger and the hatred. Now, they're defending a guy who, unless everybody involved is lying, went at a cop with a knife. They don't care. Doesn't matter the circumstances. White cop shot black man. That is it. Doesn't matter if the black man was armed. Doesn't matter if the black man was the aggressor. Doesn't matter if he was committing crimes. They defend somebody who is indefensible in the name of race, which, by the way, is racism. And Pete has to walk this tightrope. He's not doing a particularly effective job of it. But even if he were, this angry crowd wasn't going to have any of it.
Can you say to us today, in front of all these cameras, that Black Lives Matter?
Did you just ask me if Black Lives Matter?
Yes,
we want to hear you say it. Black Lives
Matter. Of course, Black Lives Matter.
Then fire your car!
Are you a racist?
What about a black life? What matters about a black life to you, Mayor Pete? What matters about a black life to you?
Pete Buttigieg didn't shoot anybody. The guy who was shot was allegedly wielding a knife and going at a police officer. The investigation will commence and the facts will come out and they won't matter at all. They will fall on deaf ears. Those people yelling at him were interested in vengeance. They were ruled by emotion. They don't give a damn. There could be full-blown HD directed by Steven Spielberg footage of the guy trying to kill the police officer. The police officer could have been stabbed 50 times. It doesn't matter. They are on board with the narrative and they're going with it right there. And they're angry at Pete, who had nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. On Meet the Press, they had a roundtable discussion about how this is really bad for Mayor Pete. They helped create the narrative that made it really bad for Pete. It's Frankenstein's monster going back to burn down the castle, like I always say. Listen to Chuck Todd and the gang.
The question, though, is who had the worst week in the Democratic primary? Is it Joe Biden or is it Pete Buttigieg, who is getting tested now with a crisis in South Bend? A white police officer kills a black citizen of South Bend. He has been there most of the weekend dealing with protesters and really being read the riot act.
Again, all indications are that this shooting was justified self-defense. It doesn't matter. You notice what Chuck Todd doesn't do is recount anything about the weapon, the incident at all. It's just white cop, black guy, there you go, black citizen, there you go. He wasn't breaking into cars and wielding a knife and going at the cop at all. It's just left out. Chuck Todd didn't say anything about it. That leaves people to fill in the blanks. If you didn't know the story, if you didn't hunt around on the internet to try and find some of the details about the story, you wouldn't know any of that. You just think, as a cop shot another black guy. If you actually look into all of these cases, there's 99% of them are justified, but it doesn't matter. People are so whipped up into this identity politics of the left that if it's someone from my team, then it doesn't matter the circumstances. Let's just go. This is an outrage and it's racism. This is the way the Democratic Party has encouraged people to act. And some people take them up on it, along with paid hack activists who live for this kind of stuff. And it's coming back to bite them. Back to Mayor Pete, because they talk about this on Meet the Press in a second, but back to the angry mob yelling at Mayor Pete.
I do not have evidence that there has been discipline for racist behavior in the case of
But if you truly running for president and you had people to vote for you, you running for president and you want black people to vote for you, that's a downfall. That's not going to happen.
I'm not asking for your vote.
You ain't going to get it either.
I'm not asking for your vote, and you ain't going to get it either. There's no rationalization. He was I'll let the gang at Meet the Press explain that line, but it's true. Pete is, he's not to blame here, but the media is up against it. They've got their flavor of the month and their long-term narrative now butting heads. And the narrative is winning because the narrative is more powerful. The narrative... Yeah, going and trying to help Pete, is that really worth throwing away 5, 6, 10 years worth of work? Bring in some truth? No, it's not really worth it. So Pete is expendable. The individual is always expendable to the progressive left, especially in the name of, in the pursuit of power, in the pursuit of what their goals are, their agenda. So back to the people, because on Meet the Press, they play just a version of that, or they reference it. Back to the little roundtable discussion at Meet the Press.
Welcome to the NFL. All right, this is a big test. Pete Buttigieg, is he ready for the national stage in his own city? This to me is a big test for him.
It's a big test, and unlike former Vice President Biden, he doesn't have a long-established relationship with the African-American community. He didn't work on civil rights, and he's really just starting to introduce himself to American voters. Right now, that was taking place in South Bend. To what extent will it resonate? Clearly going to be a topic of the debates. But look, I think what he did that was smart was that he went off the campaign trail, he went back home, and he dealt with those people in his own community face-to-face. The question is, did he do a good enough job?
Did he do a good enough job? They clearly, on this Meet the Press panel, don't think he did. Lost in all of this, again, is any of the facts of the case. Facts don't matter. This roundtable of journalists were not interested in the facts of the case. How is Pete handling it? Pete's trying to walk this delicate line of not seeming like he's too in favor of the police and saying that he can't come out and say they're racist because there isn't really any evidence, at least as of yet. It's just white cop shoots black guy. How many white people have been shot by police? How many Asians have been shot by police? How many? You notice this never happens with Hispanics, at least not yet. If you look at the Washington Post statistics, it's, you know, the numbers are very similar. Breakdown in race, people shot by police. But One fits the narrative, the rest don't. I wrote about this in my book extensively, how big of a scam this whole thing is. The Meet the Press gang continued.
You know, though, we're getting some scrutiny here. It was interesting. Politico magazine, Peter, noted that the South Bend Police Department has not gotten more diverse under Mayor Pete Buttigieg. It's actually gotten whiter.
Yeah.
Under, and I, you know, I'm sorry, when you look at the three big cities that have had problems over the last 50 years, Miami, New York, L.A., all of them realized the one big thing they had to change was diversifying their police force. And you're just sitting there going, 2012? And this hasn't happened in South Bend?
Everything's about race. It has nothing to do about the case. Was this guy going after a police officer with a knife while trying to break into cars? Perhaps drunk, perhaps high, who knows? Perhaps sober and locked his keys in the car and it was a complete misunderstanding. Not one single person you've heard talk knows. Not one single person you've heard talk cares. They don't give a damn. It is the narrative, white cop, black guy. As if this wouldn't have happened. As if black police officers are very forgiving and understanding of people who come at them with knives. It is disgusting. Now, in the end, it's left-on-left violence, so I'm not really going to lose any sleep over it. But I just wanted to point it out, because it's not going to be pointed out anyplace else. Most people are afraid to talk about this sort of stuff. Like, oh, race talk makes me nervous. Race talk doesn't make me nervous. I couldn't care less about the sensitivities involved. We want to have a real, left always says, we need to have a real serious discussion about race. And then anytime anybody tries to, they say, you're a racist, you're a racist. Well, I'm willing to have that serious discussion. Let's have a serious discussion. Let's involve facts. Let's wait until the evidence comes out. That isn't allowed anymore. It's straight up emotion because one party benefits from this immeasurably. And now they're butting up against their other interest of trying to build up Pete Buttigieg, their flavor of the month. So I suspect he's in for a tough row to hoe. And he will be asked about this on the debate stage, and he's going to have to come up with an interesting answer. It's going to be fun to watch. Lastly, let's just do this really quickly. I could save it for tomorrow, but I want to get it in there because I teased it at the beginning. Cory Booker, he had kind of a week where he got some attention with his little scolding of Joe Biden for praising working with segregationists. And then, as if on cue, written as part of a comedy skit, after telling Joe Biden that he needs to apologize because he said nice things about Democrats who were segregationists and his ability to work with people he disagreed with, Cory Booker at a town hall said this.
I am.
My question was, would you be willing to have an audience with him concerning that segregation?
You know, I live in Newark, so we have famous Mosque 25. We have Nation of Islam there. As mayor, I met with lots of folks. I've heard Minister Farrakhan's speeches for a lot of my life. So I don't feel like I need to do that, but I'm not one of these people that says I wouldn't sit down with anybody to hear what they have to say. But I live on a neighborhood where I'm getting guys on the streets offering and selling his works. So I'm very familiar with Minister Louis Farrakhan and his beliefs.
Cory Booker scolds Joe Biden for talking about his ability to work with people he disagrees with, and he just happened to pick two segregationists to do it, saying that's horribly insensitive. And then a few days later, Cory Booker says, yeah, I'd meet with Louis Farrakhan. I'm very familiar with his work. I don't need to, but I love how the guy said, would you accept an audience with him like he's the freaking Pope or something? But I'll meet with anybody. Really, you'll meet with anybody. So would you work with segregationist Democrat senators if you were in the Senate? Would you meet with David Duke, Corey? He's anybody. I would hope you wouldn't, just like I would hope you wouldn't meet with Louis Farrakhan. But in an attempt to pander to the guy asking you a question at this town hall, you said, yeah, I would meet with him. I've read The Final Call. I think he's got some pretty good ideas down there. You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. They are beyond parody. That's why I call it the Woke Olympics. Really, honest and truly. I didn't get a chance to talk about Elizabeth Warren pandering, saying that we need to give retroactive tax cuts and payments to gay couples because they were punished in the tax code before they were legally allowed to marry. again, the ultimate in pandering. Maybe we'll get to that tomorrow as the woke Olympics roll on. I really love this phrase that I coined, so I'm going to use it a lot, and I'll come up with a nice narration for the theme song of the Olympic theme. But that's it. Email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, go ahead and tell me how horrible I am for any of the things I said today. And if you want to enter to win a signed copy of the Shannon Bream book, the drawing will be on Wednesday. The winners will actually be announced on Friday's show. So you have till like noon on Wednesday to enter. So don't wait. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Rate and review on iTunes if you get a chance, please. And I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm not asking for your vote.
You ain't gonna get it either.